Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Today's business travelers are finding that fitting in a little leisure time keeps them recharged and excited on work trips. I know this because whenever I travel for work, I always try and meet up with a friend to catch up, have a great dinner, or hit a museum wherever I am. So if you're traveling for work, go with the card that puts the travel in business travel, the Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card. If you travel, you know. The spirit of performance is what defines Acura, and now it's electric, introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com. C4 Smart Energy is a proud sponsor of How I Built This. It's harder to focus than ever these days. Thankfully, C4 has reinvented the energy drink game with C4 Smart Energy, the only energy drink clinically proven to provide enhanced mental focus. Containing 200 milligrams of natural caffeine, a blend of vitamins, and zero sugar, it was formulated to support your well-being and help you feel your best, all while enhancing mental focus. They taste great and they really work, especially after hours of interviews when I'm mentally exhausted and I need a boost to help me get my focus back. From your brain to your body, C4 Smart Energy does it all and tastes amazing. Pick up a case of Smart Energy today at Costco. C4 Smart Energy. Stay focused. Hello, everyone. So my big news, I got COVID. You can probably hear that in my voice. Anyway, I wasn't able to do any interviews this week, but we wanted to make sure you have brand new stuff to hear in your feed this week. So we're releasing this additional brand new episode of How I Built This Lab today. And if you haven't heard the lab, well, think of it kind of like a sandbox where we explore all sorts of big ideas connected to entrepreneurship. Anyway, we'll have another lab episode out this Thursday, and then next week we'll be back to our regular schedule of releasing a new episode of How I Built This on Mondays and How I Built This Lab on Thursdays. Thank you so much for your support and understanding. Now, onto the show. Hello and welcome to How I Built This Lab. I'm Guy Raz. Today's guest is Eric Liebke. He's spent nearly 30 years working for Adidas, which is actually how it's pronounced. It's one of the biggest sportswear and apparel companies in the world, and he started there in an entry-level job in the 1990s, eventually making his way up to the executive board and becoming global brand president. It was actually Eric who pushed the company to partner with some of the biggest names in the entertainment industry, leading to collaborations with Kanye West and Beyonce. And along the way, he helped revitalize the Adidas brand. But while he was climbing that corporate ladder, Eric also came to see the environmental impact of the fashion industry. So much of the performance sports apparel Adidas is known for, the shoes and t-shirts and running shorts and backpacks and water bottles, it's all mostly made from plastic, which eventually becomes plastic waste in our landfills and oceans and rivers and lakes. So Eric began pushing Adidas to make their clothing more sustainable, using more recycled materials, including recycled plastics recovered from the world's oceans. But that wasn't enough. So in 2019, Eric left one of the biggest jobs at one of the biggest brands in the apparel industry to start his own clothing company, Unless Collective, which makes clothing entirely from plant-based materials, no plastic at all. So at the end of that t-shirt or jacket's life, it can actually decompose. Eric Liebke, welcome. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Great to be here.
All right. 26-year career at Adidas. And what you really became known for was an obsessive focus on sustainability. So first of all, when we think about the apparel industry, right, not many of us think about sustainability. And Adidas, one of the biggest apparel makers in the world, tell me how you sort of had this kind of epiphany that things had to change while you were there.
Yeah, I guess it goes just to give you a little context. We were doing a turnaround for the brand. The brand had fallen to, its lowest level in years. It was down. Its share price was trading in the $50 range.
Wow.
Investors were up in arms. Activists were warming up. The press was calling for our CEO's head, and it was kind of a tumultuous time. And instead, Herbert Hainer, the CEO at the time, didn't decide to, step away. He decided to change up the board, and that's when I came into the board. And what he looked at me, he said, "Hey, Eric, you need to reset the brand. And whatever you do, don't ask for permission. Just ask for my advice." And with that, I kind of got to work. Those are words I actually live by to this day, because I really like that kind of attitude. But anyway, with that, we got to work. And we really became a much more consumer-oriented brand than we'd ever been before, and really focused on, through sport, how can we change lives, and really took that on ourselves. And so when we looked at that, of course, as a sports brand, you want to make product that can, run faster, jump higher, do whatever the sport necessities are. But we recognize that the culture of sport doesn't stop when you leave the playing field, when you leave the court. It goes into the stands, it goes into the hallways, it goes into the music venues. So we started to unlock that potential of the brand, and that's where things like, Kanye West came in, or Beyonce, and those things kind of added into the brand.
Yeah.
But then the third thing we kind of looked at is like, the world, is kind of a tumultuous place, and it's on 24/7 with our consumers. So if you're focused on your consumer, it's like, yeah, you have to care about helping them in sport, and yes, you have to be relevant for them in the culture of sport, but you also have to kind of make the world a better place for them. And how do we do that through sport? And so we started to tackle some big social or climate issues, and the one that really hit home to me was the impact that the fashion industry has on the environment. And once you see and once you hear the degradation of the planet and fast fashion's planned obsolescence contribution to that, you can't unsee and unhear that. And so I really just committed myself, committed the brand to changing that, and I'm super proud of what we did there. But also, kind of flipped the switch in my head and knew that this was going to be my life's calling.
I remember because I've seen you talk about this, of course, and we've met in the past. And something that you would say is there is enough plastic in the world to fulfill all of our new plastic needs for the next 50 years or something like that, right? I mean,
Yeah.
if we were to recycle all of it.
Yeah, it's what I like to term is plastic is a forever material, which means there's not a piece of plastic that's ever been created that's not still with us today in some shape or form.
Wow.
So, if you think about, and plastics is kind of a recent invention, if you will. It really didn't come up until, the late 30s, and really started to hit its heyday in the 50s, and it was a miracle material. Unfortunately, it's very good, and so it just doesn't go away. And yeah, I think in the fashion space, you've got, arguably 60 to 70%, depending on what brand and what performance features you're looking for, are made out of polyester, which is a form of plastic. And that's also a forever material that never goes away.
Yeah. I actually went on a school field trip with my son and his class to a recycling plant before the pandemic. And I remember thinking about you because I was seeing all this plastic there, knowing that plastic is really, really hard to recycle and very few recycling plants have the capacity to do it. Why is it so hard to just recycle it and reuse it?
Well, there's tons of data on that. The first of all, there's plastic probably recycling has been propped up by the big plastic companies, because
To make you think that it's all recyclable.
correct. The joke of the magic, triangle with the arrows, showing that, hey, this is recyclable, and in essence, it's not. I mean, it depends on where you are and where you live and what your recycling center takes. But I'm living in Portland, Oregon, which is, probably one of the highest, or more advanced recycling areas. And they take ones or twos, if you have a one in your pyramid or a two, and those are basically, that's really the two plastics they take. And
Right.
the numbers of plastics go up to nine, and the other seven are not taken, and they're just taken to landfills or burned.
And even when you do recycle plastic, it does it I mean, it can create toxic fumes, right? It can create emissions.
Absolutely. I mean, there is no way with plastic. You either put it in the ground, you put it in the air, you put it in the ocean, but it still lives, and it still destroys. So, you know, if you burn it, which people think, oh, it's burned, it's gone away. It doesn't. It just goes up in the air and rains back down on us. So they're finding microplastics, which are the tiny, you know, cellular level plastics.
Yeah.
They're finding them everywhere from the, you know, the Mariana Trench in the deepest part of the ocean to the to Mount Everest. And
it's unbelievable.
And the density and the amount of it is just going up and up and up. So.
And it's in our bodies.
It's in our bodies. It's in our blood. It's in our organs. It's in the placentas of pregnant women. It's in our fetuses. It's everywhere. And you know, you could argue that microplastics, you're eating based upon your diet, you're eating about a credit card worth of microplastics a week.
Wow. And we probably don't fully understand the toxicity, you know, the amount of toxins we're absorbing in that plastic.
Well, I think the research is still being developed, and not to bum everybody out because there are solutions to this, but it's good to get the frame out there. You know, chemicals and plastics, there's like 8,000 chemicals in different plastics, and that's good because it makes them highly adaptive, it makes them highly useful, it makes them highly, you know, lasting forever. But unfortunately, when those chemicals and those plastics are internalized, they can lead to endocrine disruptors impacting fertility. It can create cognitive disorders, heart disease, cancer, you name it. I mean, I think the research is early to your point, but the stuff that's coming out is pretty compelling. And what they're finding is double the amounts in our babies, because when they check their feces, they're finding double amount of microplastic penetration in our children, in our babies, than they are in adults. So it's even more concerning as it affects our younger generations.
All right, stay with us, Eric Liedtke. You're listening to How I Built This Lab. I'm Guy Raz, and we will be right back with more on this topic. I promise it's going to be a little bit more optimistic in a moment. Successful companies don't happen overnight. It takes an awful lot of grit, determination, and teamwork. Our sponsor, Atlassian, knows this better than anyone. Their team has spent over 20 years creating software that powers collaboration for teams around the world. By creating software like Jira and Confluence to improve companies' workflow, Atlassian is on a mission to make impossibility a reality. And now, they're ushering in the next era of teamwork with Atlassian Intelligence. When you think of AI, pizza may not be the first thing that comes to mind. But global pizza chains are actually using AI to scan their pies and make sure they meet their quality standards. From space exploration to making pizza to producing podcasts like the one you're listening to right now, Atlassian thinks there's a lot about AI that companies should be excited about. Atlassian Intelligence transforms teamwork by empowering AI-human collaboration. Atlassian's AI-powered software can help you glean new insights from your data, boost individual productivity by eliminating menial tasks, and help your team make faster, more informed decisions to produce the best results for your customers. And the best part? With Atlassian Intelligence in your corner, you can trust that your work is protected and kept confidential. This isn't just a small step. It's a giant leap in accelerating work. Atlassian AI-powered software like Jira and Confluence help teams accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually, we're great, but together, we're so much better. Learn how Atlassian AI can help power high-performing teams at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian. As a business-to-business marketer, your needs are unique. B2B buying cycles are long, and your customers face incredibly complex decisions. Isn't it time you had a marketing platform built specifically for you? LinkedIn Ads empowers marketers with solutions for you and your customers. LinkedIn Ads allow you to build the right relationships, drive results, and reach your customers in a respectful environment. You'll be able to drive results with targeting and measurement tools built specifically for B2B. In technology, LinkedIn generated 2 to 5 times higher return on ad spend than other social media platforms. I've talked to hundreds of founders and business leaders every day on this show, and I've learned that LinkedIn has been vital to the growth of their companies. It helps them build relationships with customers and get direct access to thousands of decision makers. Make B2B marketing everything it can be and get a $100 credit on your next campaign. Go to linkedin.com/builtthis to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/builtthis. Terms and conditions apply. Are you sick of the same old presentation programs at work? Better presentations are possible, and they're called Canva presentations. Canva is the easy-to-use online design platform for presentations, docs, whiteboards, videos, and more. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations are perfect for any deck you want to design. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Canva is used by 90% of Fortune 500 companies. So whether you work at a small or a big company in a team of 2 or 2,000, Canva empowers workplaces everywhere to design compelling visual content, save time, and be more productive together. I know lots of organizations that use Canva to do client pitch decks, stakeholder presentations, and slides for team meetings every day. Nail your next work presentation with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work. Welcome back to How I Built This Lab. I'm Guy Raz. I'm here with Eric Liedtke, founder of Unless Collective, former global chief marketing officer at Adidas, and he really pushed that company to pursue a sustainability model. Eric, you had pushed Adidas to set the goal of eliminating virgin polyester from their products, that to only use recycled plastics by 2024. That's just a couple years away. Do you think that's still an achievable goal?
Absolutely. And when I was at Adi, we were right in that frame of 60 to 70% of our product being polyester-based. So to get off of the virgin polyester, we thought, okay, let's take the first step, which is recycled polyester, recognizing that that's better, and we're not going to let perfect get in the way of better. And from what I hear and what I read from what Adidas is still doing is they're honoring that target, and they may even exceed that and hit it in an earlier time frame. So I'm really proud of them continuing to fight the battle against virgin polyester and hopefully polyester in the future.
Right. So, okay. So you were pushing for recycling plastic, for using existing plastic, recycling it and using it to make products. But plastic is still a problem. I mean, even if it's recycled, it's better because it doesn't, you know, less of it ends up in the ocean. But it's still and I want to be clear about this. I'm as much of a violator of this as anyone else. I'm wearing clothing with plastic in it now, probably. I have my glasses, just looking at my desk, my computer, everything around me. We're addicted to it. We need it.
We are, and there are not a lot of options. It's really difficult to buy sustainable when you talk about buying a non-plastic product.
All right, so clearly now it's plastic that is the problem, but plastic is also this thing that the world depends on. So you left Adidas after 26 years to go and pursue your own, to kind of, I guess, to put your money where your mouth is, right? Which is to say, you know, let's experiment. Let's see if you can actually make a brand of clothing without plastics called Unless Collective. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so the holy grail was always, can we have something that's, you know, from nature, goes back to nature?
Yeah.
Can we have something that fixes the problem of waste in fashion, which I think is probably the biggest sin. So we can talk about all the issues with microplastics, but I don't think enough companies even give any consideration to what happens to their product when you're done using it.
Right.
So there are, when you talk about the problem of fashion waste, there's you know, this planned obsolescence of fashion coming in and out of seasons every 3, 6, 9 months.
Yeah.
And where does all that stuff go when it's no longer being worn? And it doesn't go away. We've already established that. It doesn't go harmlessly away. And it also can be just shipped off to, you know, other countries.
And what do they do with it? What happens to it? Is it burned?
So 40% is estimated to be unusable. So it goes immediately into landfills, which I'm sure are leaching into the oceans and are being burned. So it goes right into the air, right into the ground, right into the water. The other 60%, I guess, is being sold, but it's absolutely devastated the local garment industry. And it's really shocking when you start to look at some of those things. So you've got this problem of plastics and what happens to them end of life. You've got this problem of fashion waste from clothing and what happens to them. And so to me, those two things are really all that's contributed us to build a better, you know, a better way. And that is marrying the innovation of new material science and let's call it, you know, plant-based, 100% plant-based science at this point, with great looking product where the consumer doesn't have to compromise their taste to wear something that's better for the world or compromise their values for their taste. So we really see that as a white spot that hasn't been explored yet. And we're a band of warriors that's really trying to solve that with the world's first 100% plant-based, zero plastic fashion brand.
So if I were to distill it down into kind of something sort of simple to understand, could you describe Unless Collective as an attempt to create not necessarily a fast fashion brand, but a brand where you could come up with many different styles of apparel every month and you could dispose of it and it would disintegrate?
100%. It would decompose or biodegrade, whichever word you want to use, back into the ground that would supply, you know, micro-rich nutrients that you could grow new feedstock from.
Compostable clothing.
Correct.
Wow.
It's that simple. So there's no other brand that's trying to do this because it's really hard. And I respect what every other brand is trying to do in a sustainable space. But we do things a little bit differently because we like to start with the end. And we start with the question, what happens to this when you're done wearing it? And that's what led us to specifically attack the problem of plastic waste with these plant-based compostable solutions. And I think it's just very important to, you know, start with that kind of clear brief, because otherwise you get lost in the noise of sustainability. And we're very clear on our mission to create, you know, zero plastic waste at end of life, which we think is probably the greatest solution that the fashion industry needs today.
If your goal, right, is to help move the industry towards sustainability by providing a model and an example, you could arguably have sort of scaled this faster through a massive global brand like Adidas, right, or Nike or H&M, right, mm-hmm. Rather than starting your own company from the ground up. So why did you take that approach? Because it is, right, you're starting small, hoping to get big, but, you know, some of these massive brands, they're the ones that are really having the biggest impact, the negative impact, and could have a positive impact.
Yeah, I think it's a great question and something I slept on for a long time. And I believe I took a sustainability approach as far as I could while sitting in the position I had with Adidas. I think at a certain point, the incumbent companies are complicit in the make, take, and throw away culture that we find ourselves in today. And I would only compare it to the auto industry. I think there's no doubt that electric engine technology was available for years to the big players, whether it be Mercedes or Porsche or General Motors or Ford or whoever. You know, and this is where I don't want to cast any judgment, but I think they did as much as they thought they needed to do to win the consumers, and that was called a hybrid car. Well, I think we've all had experience with hybrid cars, and I don't think they come close to the urgency that was needed. So Tesla came out and built something up that really shook up the world and scared the incumbents. And now everyone has an electric car, and the electric car industry is 10 or 15 years ahead of where anybody's wild imaginations thought it would be.
Yeah.
And it doesn't hurt that, you know, the global political situation and how that kind of is feeding into it as well. So I would say the same thing in fashion. It's like, you can go to a certain point with the incumbents, but sooner or later, the incumbents need to be forced to change from outside in. And I feel like, again, I took it as far as I could when I was in-house.
Right.
I did, to your point, entertain, you know, buying a company or injecting myself into a smaller company that I thought could pivot in this direction. But I got tired of waiting, and my urgency was too high, and the world's urgency is too great to wait any longer. So I know how hard it is to start a brand, and it's not an easy road. And I can tell you that from my first, you know, from my first months, but it is extremely satisfying and rewarding. And I want to give that option to the consumer. And I think we have to put it back on, if the consumer is given the option to buy a better solution, will they? So, and that's where I think that we have to encourage your listeners and everyone else out there that, you know, there is a better way. And they need to participate in it, because the material solutions are coming, the brands are coming, but they need the help of, you know, consumer conviction to buy into that purpose and buy into those initiatives.
Eric, stand by. We're going to be back in just a sec. You're listening to How I Built This Lab. I'm Guy Raz, and we'll be back with Eric Liedtke in just a moment. You only get one chance to go public, and the stakes are high. Deloitte's free IPO readiness tool will help you grade your current state of readiness. Less than 10% of companies using Deloitte's free tool discover they're ready for an IPO. While the IPO market can be unpredictable, your company's readiness plan doesn't have to be. Don't miss your IPO window. Being ready starts with getting ready. With Deloitte's free and easy-to-use IPO self-assess tool, you can gauge your IPO readiness and receive tailored insights on 9 areas of focus in less than 30 minutes. Visit Deloitte.com/US/HIBT and launch your IPO journey today. We've all been there. Maybe we used one or two misleading words in a shared document, and then the whole team spends a lot of wasted time trying to get on the same page. But we don't need to make those mistakes. Grammarly is a trusted AI writing partner that saves your company from miscommunication and all of the wasted time and money that goes with it. I spend a lot of time writing. I write scripts, emails, speeches, proposals, you name it. And Grammarly helps me find the right tone. It does so much more than correct grammar. It's almost like a trusted writing partner. And when every word your team writes is clear, concise, and on brand, everything gets better. Teams that communicate better with Grammarly report 52% less time spent writing sales emails and 66% less time spent editing marketing content. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly to work faster and hit their goals while keeping their data secure. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Hey, welcome back to How I Built This Lab. I'm Guy Raz. So, Eric, let's talk about how Unless Collective works. You're going to be making streetwear, so I'm assuming T-shirts and jeans or trousers and hats. And first of all, how do you make it? What material do you use? You keep saying plant based. Is it like, I don't know, flax linen? Like what are you using?
Well, I think right now it's the simplest solutions are the easiest. And so, from an apparel standpoint, we're using cottons, we're using eucalyptus, we're using tensile fibers, things that are readily available for everyone to use. What's different about us is we're looking at everything that goes into it. And I think that what we're trying to do is really call out some of the gaps in the innovations that are currently in the marketplace. So did you know that a 100% cotton shirt that's labeled 100% cotton doesn't have to be 100% cotton? Because the guidelines were not set from a sustainability standpoint. They were set from a Federal Trade Commission's standpoint, and it was all about importation duties and things of that nature. So you can label a shirt 100% cotton, and then all of the trims and bindings and closure systems can be plastic, and the consumer would never know the difference. And that's some of the green washing, or I like to say green wishing, that's going on in our industry that we need to call out. So when we make something, we are talking about everything has been thought through, from collars, detail, stitching, closures, materials, finishes, dyes, inks, labels, graphics, packaging. Everything is cellulose based, which means it's coming from one plant or another. It could be coming from tensile, which is more a product of wood pulp. It could be coming from eucalyptus, it could be coming from cotton, could be coming from linens and hemps and things. It depends on the little details that we need. And, you know, I just would point out, like, you know, we have every company puts labels on theirs on their product, but almost 100% of them are petroleum based or polyester. We had to go and source a new label that would allow us to, you know, find one from cotton, which is really hard to do because no one's making them anymore because they're
the actual label.
Yeah, the little clip tag you might have on the back of your neck, or on the clip tag on the bottom of your shirt. It's like those things typically are 100% polyester, not ours. But you then had to figure out a new supply chain to find those and then put them together with your cotton shirt manufacturers. Most threads are synthetic because they have higher resiliency. They're more heat conductive, so they don't melt under pressure, and they're easier to work with. So most of the supply chains have adapted, you know, synthetic threads now instead of cellulose-based threads. Not us. We had to go out and find cellulose threads that could put our product together when you talk about a t-shirt and how you stitch it together.
Wow.
But again, no one else is kind of looking at that. Inks and dyes. Our inks and dyes are 100% water-based and clear of oils and petroleums. We have to, again, find the different suppliers of who can provide those different inks and methods to apply those inks.
Yeah.
And that means it's a funny kind of, sometimes we get problems with color matching and things like that that we have to correct for. So every time we go into a new material, it's typically a, as our creative director Paul Guyer says, it's a long dark hallway. We embrace that hallway, but it requires a lot of good old fashioned ingenuity to figure out the solutions of the next gen materials and supply chains and how we put it all together.
Yeah,
that's kind of why we put together the rockstar team that we have.
Eric, when it comes to manufacturing the clothing, right? There's a whole process involved, right? It's made in a factory, it's packaged, it's shipped. They're all, you know, along that chain beyond just the production and the waste, the local waste, and the fact that people throw these items away. There's the shipping costs and so on, and the carbon emissions.
Mm-hmm.
Can this be made right now? Can this be produced in the United States?
I think it's you've got different things. So let's just break it down. So cotton is the cotton we're sourcing for our cotton sews grown in North Carolina. It is then unfortunately having to ship to Korea.
Mm-hmm.
To be milled because there's no more mills in America.
Right.
And then it's brought back to America where we can do the cut and sew and we do the dyeing. So I would say 80% of manufacturing is here. One of the things I'm working with, because I have grand visions for, you know, not just doing a brand, but also disrupting and creating new supply chains, is really bringing milling back here and using the current administration to really fund some of those things. So we are working with, you know, bringing, you know, cotton mills back to America, because that would cut down the big transportation there.
Yeah.
Our jackets currently are being done out of Portugal, but we are looking at these because it's a woven versus a cotton cut and sew. So the wovens are being done in Portugal right now just because of the quality and the willingness to work with the material set that we have. But there, we are entertaining conversations. So just as a startup, to your point earlier about, you know, about doing this with existing versus startups, startups don't have their choice of any factory they want. They've got to work with the factories that will work with them, and the minimums that they have need to be the appropriate size volumes that we can cater and hope to sell.
All right, I'm looking at what's available now: t-shirts, canvas jackets. They're awesome. Tell me what in a year's time, what will Enless Collective look like? What will you be offering?
Yeah, well, we want to have a proper merchandise collection selection that you can find what you want for your wardrobe and you can have your favorite items made out of, you know, better solution and that are just as beautiful and well made. And I think, so we've got hoodies coming out. We've got new t-shirts coming out, always constant drops. We've got online jackets. We've got bucket hats. We've got footwear on the radar for end of this year. And we've got some workwear shirts and shorts coming. So we've got a complete range of apparel product coming and footwear on the horizon in the near term.
Ultimately, is your goal to turn this into like Supreme, that kind of level of brand, but without people even knowing that it's plant-based and zero waste? Because right now, if you look at, I mean, they're awesome. There's some amazing designs, but they are obviously connected and tied to the idea that it's plant-based. You know, so one of the shirts says "Bury Me," or
yep.
So it is connected to the sustainability message. But down the line, do you want that to kind of drop that and basically have consumers not even know about that?
I think ultimately, and this goes into my background. I mean, I've always tried to be at the intersection of material innovation and consumer behavior.
Yeah.
And I think in my dream that you would not have to talk about sustainability. You could just build a killer brand that was built in a better way. Because I think ultimately the consumer doesn't want to compromise their tastes for their values. And I think that's where we need to get to in fashion, is you need to have that quality of design and that quality of desirability in your product that is second to none and has no compromises because it's plant-based or because it's sustainable. And
right.
I think too many times we're asking consumers to, you know, wear that sustainability on their forehead. And I think that's part of the issues with the scalability of sustainable solutions. And I'll point at Tesla as another great example. It's like, you don't have to compromise your driving experience to drive a Tesla, but it's better for the world. And I think that's what fashion needs. That's what many consumer industries need.
Eric Liedtke, CEO and founder of Unless Collective. Thanks so much for being on.
You bet. My pleasure.
Hey, thanks so much for listening to How I Built This Lab. Please do follow us on your podcast app so you always have the latest episode downloaded. If you want to follow us on Twitter, our account is at How I Built This and mine is at Guy Raz. And on Instagram, I'm at guy.raz. If you want to contact the team, our email address is hibt@id.wondery.com. This episode was produced by Chris Messini with editing by John Isabella. Our audio engineer was Maggie Luthar. Our music was composed by Ramtin Arablouei. Our production team at How I Built This includes Alex Chung, Carla Estevez, Casey Herman, JC Howard, Liz Metzger, Sam Paulson, Carrie Thompson, Catherine Seifer, Josh Lash, and Elaine Coates. Neva Grant is our supervising editor. Beth Donovan is our executive producer. I'm Guy Raz, and you've been listening to How I Built This. If you like How I Built This, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey. Today's business travelers are finding that fitting in a little leisure time keeps them recharged and excited on work trips. I know this because whenever I travel for work, I always try and meet up with a friend to catch up, have a great dinner, or hit a museum wherever I am. So if you're traveling for work, go with the card that puts the travel in business travel, the Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card. If you travel, you know.